Say something, goddammit. You're on television. You're live to the whole world.
Hello and welcome to another movie podcast. I am Oscar, and with me today is from across the lands of the Nile River. Doesn't make any sense. Is who?
Oh, it's Luke.
I know you're not anywhere else but this country, but anyway, thank you for making it in today, Luke. And who else is with us today?
Curtis of the Mississippi. And Ralph.
I just want to say a different river. Now a river is more popular than Mississippi. So there you go. That's where I went. Hello, everyone. This is episode number 55. And what we typically do on this show is that we review three films. The three films we'll be reviewing today, one of them will be part of our ongoing, almost finished, marathon where we review classic films and hopefully in a way to show how they've shaped films today. And that film will be House on Haunted Hill. What year did that come out, Luke? Do you remember?
I'm going to say 1950.
50? I thought it was less than that. But maybe 50.
1959.
Wow. All right, so we'll be reviewing that classic film. It's Luke's picks today. So the other two films he got for us today will be Ant-Man and the Wasp and You Were Never Really Here, which is what Luke is happening here every week. Every week he's not really here.
In a nutshell.
And more than a nutshell. Remember, you can find our show at otherpodcast.weebly.com.
Still haven't fixed it?
No, it still hasn't fixed.
Just pay the man.
Oh.
I will when I get paid. Anyway, so that's happening right now. And what we also do on this show is that we talk about recent discoveries and bonuses. What bonuses are is that we give out a free episode, not a free episode, but an episode, an extra bonus episode for the month to those who donate to our show. Any amount counts. And that bonus episode for this month, if you wish to donate, it was the Teen Titans movie, but I changed it to a movie that came out of Sundance. It's out in theaters right now. It's called Sorry to Bother You. And spoiler alert, Ralph and I did just see it. So based on that high, I wanted to switch it to the bonus. So that's what's happening. A little change up there for you guys. But Sorry to Bother You will be our bonus. And for those who got the bonus episode 5 months ago, or everyone else is getting it today, or I should say this month, and it's Black Panther. That's what we reviewed in February, I believe. So check that out. Check out our website for that information and that episode. Also, our recent discoveries is basically just what it sounds like. We each of us talk about the titles of movies or docs or whatever that we've seen apart from each other to catch up to you guys how and what we see during our time off. And Luke has got a lot for us because he hasn't been on the show for a bit. Luke, why don't you start us off today? And you have how many titles? Like seven? Six, seven? So why don't you regale us with your viewing, watching habits?
All right. Well, just because I am in the actual place where this movie was filmed, and it's actually a really big deal here for a lot of people.
Really?
I finally saw Jaws, the 1975 thriller by Steven Spielberg.
Took you a while.
I got there eventually.
I mean, Jaws has been only like an amazing movie for so long, you know.
Right, you know. I've seen bits and pieces of it, but I've never seen the entire movie.
Did you see the shark parts?
yes, I saw some shark parts.
Right. So, what'd you think?
Kind of a long movie.
An old movie or long?
I mean, long. I mean, 2 hours.
That's not long.
So, I mean, come on. They're just going to kill a shark. Shouldn't take that long.
It's perfectly paced. Perfectly paced for me.
I will give it that. Yeah, and I actually like the... since I saw the Steven Spielberg documentary a couple months back, I kind of had like a little insight about the movie, so I kind of found that a little more fun to watch.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you are in that unique place where you hadn't seen Jaws before that documentary, which is that HBO special, for those who are wondering. Okay.
Right.
Cool. What else did you see?
Yeah. Actually, a funny thing is, yesterday I did like an island tour of Martha's Vineyard, and they actually pointed out a couple of the spots that they actually used, you know, to film Jaws. And it's funny because the guy's like, oh yeah, in that one scene where the sheriff guy leaves the house, walks 15, you know, steps to his right, he's actually 30 miles, you know, on the other side of the island.
Oh, wow. That's very
Yeah, so they were all over the place. Yeah, but, okay.
Oh, man, that's awesome. Was so the whole movie filmed there, cool. or just some of it?
No, the whole movie was filmed, I think, on Martha's Vineyard. Oh. Aside from, I think, and certain things they did, like, post. Like, I think the whole, like, we're going to need a bigger boat line. I think that was done in, like, some studio in California or something. Because I felt that they got added in.
Okay, okay. Right on, right on. That's cool.
Yeah. Okay. Still keeping up with Spielberg, I finally saw Empire of the Sun.
Yeah, with a young version of, what's his name? Christian Bale?
Yeah, that kid was never going to make it anywhere. Yeah. That was another long movie. But that was really good. I was surprised by this one.
That one I agree with you. Yeah, Malkovich, right? Wasn't it too? Am I right?
Who?
John Malkovich. Wasn't he in the movie?
Yes, Malkovich was in there.
Yeah, okay. It's been a while for me.
Yeah, and I didn't even know that there was a whole thing about, you know, a Japanese invasion of, you know, China and during World War II. I had no clue that that was a thing that happened. So that was pretty cool, and it's a pretty interesting coming-of-age movie, you know?
Yeah, that's a very specific atmosphere to be, you know, raised in.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't remember a lot of the movie. I remember, like, small things, but it's been a while. But that's cool. What else did you see?
Still keeping up with older movies, I finally saw Blade Runner. The original, 1982.
Which version?
Surprisingly, yes. I don't know if this one was longer than the other one.
Which
but,
cut did you watch?
You said the original.
No, it wasn't, right? I mean, it wasn't theatrical. It was the one that
final?
Ridley Scott actually approved of.
So final cut.
Yeah.
Final cut then? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is too. There's like five other versions, but... Why were you surprised that it felt longer to you?
I mean, I thought Blade Runner would be more of a... I mean, there was action, but I thought it was going to be more action and less dialogue and, you know, things of that nature. But I guess, a lot of the dialogue is necessary. But I think one of the best parts of this movie is, like, the entire world building. It's crazy, like, especially, like... The whole scene where Deckard is, like, running and chasing that one android thing. Mm-hmm. And he's, like, you know, going through all the cars and everything. And you just see, like, so many, like, different, like, subgenres of, like, people. It's, like, you know, you see, like, those cyberpunks. You see, like, these, like, I think, well, like, big Buddhist types. And then, like, you know, it's just so many things have to be thought of just for this friggin' movie.
Yeah. Yeah, it does have that. I'll give it that. As the, you know, Atari everywhere. But I'm one of those people that doesn't like the movie. I think it has a lot of flaws, and it's very, very, very too, like, it's too slow. Like, it's like, I know I hate saying that word, but it's like this one, it's not worth it. But that's for me. And I'm not saying it needed more action, it just needed less of the running time for me. But yeah, I hear you.
No, I'm not going to... It wasn't the fastest movie, but it's still a good movie.
Well, I mean, to a lot of people, you know, that's what it is. That's why I have to take it down a little bit. It's not... It's a good movie, but it doesn't like, reach any level for me, you know. But, yeah, I hear you. But you finally saw it. That's good. Did you see Blade Runner, the 2049, or no?
No, I actually... I bought that, too. But I wanted to see the original before I saw that, so
I guess
maybe next time I'll talk about 2049.
Because we reviewed on the show, I think it was just Roughland that day, right?
Yeah, okay. That sounds about right.
Yeah, because I think when that movie came out, I was, I think, in Colorado?
Possibly.
Or no?
Dude,
possible, yeah.
Still haven't seen it yet, right?
No, I'm going to see Blade Runner 2049 sometime soon.
I can't wait to see what you think of it, like not just like as an update, but as a sequel. You know, it'd be kind of cool to see what your thoughts on it. But that's cool. You saw Blade Runner, the 1982, right? 83? No. Forget what year.
I just clicked that link. 1980s.
Okay. 1980s, yeah. All right, so what's the next one? Okay. You got a more updated one here.
Yes, finally. This is the one I missed, and it's been on my list to watch since it was so... I think it was your number one movie last year. Yep. The Florida Project.
It's in a,
holy
Amazon
shit,
Prime,
that was
think,
a
right?
good movie.
It's on Amazon Prime, yeah. Oh, you liked it. Good. I'm glad.
It is. I don't know if it was on Prime. I just bought it on iTunes because I was like, fuck it. It's got to be good.
Oh, well, thanks for based on my number one pick. Thank you for buying it blindly.
Yeah,
and
it's
so good. I love it. I'm
normally don't condone this buying blindly.
No, but I feel like people are going to do it.
He does it when it's movies and things he likes.
Right, of course.
Like when the first season of Game of Thrones.
Wait, what was the first season of Game of Thrones?
It was a blind buy for me. I never watched it.
Oh, okay. Well, it's not recommended. Yeah. I would never do it. But if you do it all the time, I've known you as a person that does it. If you're going to do it, I would hope you do it for movies I know that I like and are good.
Right.
Of course. That's, you're describing every human on the planet, Ralph. Anyway.
Okay, anyways. Holy shit. Amazing movie. I can see why you loved it. As much as I hate child actors, these were like some top-notch kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you should see her interviews.
I don't want to. I bet you she's, like, really articulate.
Yeah.
She probably like,
she's, like, prim and proper. Doesn't swear or anything. It's really weird.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
But it's such a crazy environment that, you know, these kids are, like, brought up in this movie. It's nuts.
Oh, did I tell you that Jay... So Jay's on vacation. Jay, friend of the show.
Uh-huh.
Down right. there. And he took a picture of that hotel. He went and visited that hotel.
Oh, that's amazing.
Because he loved the movie, too. And he's been talking in my ear about this for the last few weeks about it. And he totally just found the place and was like, I'm going to go scope this place out. You know, it's like, fuck Disney World today, guys. I'm going to go find this Florida Project Hotel. And he found it.
Oh, man.
And it looks just like it.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
And it's all painted pink and everything?
Yeah, it's like a purple pink or something. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's amazing. But yeah, definitely great movie. And you said that the ending was kind of a doozy, right? It almost got you, right?
Yeah, it did.
Yeah,
it hit me just right. I know.
Yeah,
it
you ain't
hit
kidding.
Other people the right way, but it did to me.
I was like, "Shit, that was a powerful ending."
Yeah, I know. It was. That's kind of what. That's what made it my number one. I think just the way it ended for me.
Yeah.
Awesome. So you saw another one. That's my number one.
Yeah. Annihilation.
Yeah.
It was another blind buy. $10 on Amazon, and I got the, you know, little digital code.
Awesome.
Yeah. Was this directed by the same guy that did...
Yes.
No.
Yes, he did do the Three Stooges. Up. Yes.
Shut up. Ex Machina.
There you go.
Yes.
My apologies.
Yeah. Okay. I can see why he uses Oscar Isaac again. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Use what you got.
Yeah, no, really awesome, like, concept, crazy with, like, the whole, like, you know, them going into this shimmer thing and, like, everything's, like, mutating and whatnot.
Like, kind of
weird.
DNAs.
Yeah, but I just didn't kind of, I did like the movie, I just didn't like the beginning kind of threw me off a bit.
It's
with him just,
man.
Like, appearing.
Yeah.
It's what?
You gotta rewatch that movie.
I might have to, yeah, because it is, like, it's a lot.
It's a lot to take in, so. And it's not, I won't lie, it has a, it's deliberately paced, you know, it can be pretty tedious sometimes. It has this thing with Natalie Portman's character, like, having an affair or something, and they spend more time than you think on it, and you don't know why. And that's why it took me 2 watches for it to be, like, that good for me. But I totally get it. It's not... It has some... The beginning's definitely way worse than the lower half of the movie, like, the later half, because it gets really crazy. So, yeah. I can understand that. But, yeah, I'm glad you liked it, though.
Yeah, and it definitely has to warrant a second viewing. I do agree with that. So, I will definitely see if I could get some time and rewatch it and re-download it on this horrible internet I'm currently living through.
Really? Are you having that bad of... I mean, I'm not saying you're in an island, so it makes sense, but also, like, you're in a very fancy island.
It is. Problem is, there's a lot of people where I'm staying, so I think every internet connection is capped to a certain thing, and it's not as bad. Mm. I mean, gotcha. It's yeah, it is what it is.
Because I'm sure Elizabeth been a couple days. Having no problems right now.
Yeah, I'm saying there's been a couple of days where like the internet was like uncapped, so I just went like download crazy. But yeah, those days are gone.
That's right. Sucky, man. That sucks.
It is. The struggle is real here.
It's real, right? First world problems. What's your next film? You have three more.
Yep. This I saw in the theater here. It's Won't You Be My Neighbor.
Oh, nice.
And not only did I see it here, the director was actually in the audience with us.
You kidding?
He had like a little Q&A afterwards. Yep, he was doing like a little tour. No.
Did you ask him why did he make you cry?
He didn't.
Damn.
Did he ask where you can buy souls?
No. And I was going to ask him, like, really? You won for 20 feet from stardom? How can you sleep at night?
I mean,
because I don't think that movie deserved it.
No, I 100% agree with you. But... He didn't say, like, pick me.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, anyway. Yeah, that was a great documentary. And, you guys talked about it on last show, right?
What?
Why?
Because I thought you weren't going to like it. And I'm like, okay, there's a threshold to our friendship. That's all. Yeah, we reviewed it the last show for anyone who wants to watch.
I'm assuming you and everyone else liked it.
Yes, everyone loved it.
Okay, yeah.
Everyone
not much more to say. I mean,
on the planet.
Oh yeah, probably.
Yeah, like I said, I thoroughly enjoyed it too. The director did tell us like how he wanted to structure this documentary, and the wife, who actually Fred Rogers' wife still is alive, she actually told him like, you don't want to do just a documentary about his life because it's going to be the most boring thing ever. And he said, yeah, I agree. So
he's like, he was like just a big square, just a do-gooder square guy. Yeah,
but it's funny, and I don't remember this being in the movie, but he told us this after the thing, like a lot of the people that Fred Rogers surrounded himself with were people that needed something. They weren't, you know, individuals that were like had everything straightened out, you know, in their lives. They were like people that maybe needed a father figure, a friend, or something like that. And
they might have mentioned it, but I don't know if it was like a bullet point in the movie.
Yeah. So that's kind of cool. And there's actually there's a girl that lives on the island. When she was a little kid, she had problems with like her brain. So she has a disability. And she actually introduced the movie because when she was a younger kid, she would get up to like 100 seizures a day.
Wow.
But when her mom, you know, needed to get ready for work, she would put on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And for some reason, when he was talking, she would not get any seizures.
You're kidding.
Mm-hmm. So at one point, she fell into a coma because they had to actually literally remove half of her brain. That's why she said she's always in the right mind, but
wow. That's pretty good.
Anyway, Fred Rogers found out, so he flew out there, and even though she was in a coma, he did like a little puppet show for her, and he left her some of the puppets, so when she woke up after the coma, she saw that all the puppets were there for her.
Oh.
And she still has like the original one. Yeah.
See, this guy's badass.
That was kind of a so that was a powerful way to start this movie.
Yeah, right. No, that's pretty cool. It started that way or it ended that way?
Yeah, she introduced the movie.
Oh, it started that way. She introduced the movie.
Gotcha. Okay.
If you were paying attention to the story.
Well, it's hard to hear her both this, us, and then the headphones through his mouth. So shut up. Right. And then you have two more.
Okay.
Yeah.
Two more. Downsizing, the Matt Damon film where he becomes super small.
Right, by the guy who directed Election and shit, right? That guy.
Alexander Payne.
Yeah, and Sideways and stuff.
Oh, he did Sideways?
Yeah, same guy. Did Sideways, did that movie Nebraska, remember?
Yeah, Descendants. Yeah, About Schmidt.
Yeah, Descendants. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Wow. He's good. I can see the, some of the themes now. Okay.
Right. Now you understand downsizing.
Right. Well, I mean, because it's a positive thing, but it kind of like... It's kind of like this got this like undertone of like, you know, we are destroying this planet, so, you know, and things like that. So I tried to see this movie when I was on.
It's an emergency medical kit to the planet Earth, right?
It's something like that, yeah, because pretty much the original concept was like things like for a bunch of people actually shrunk themselves and they lived on like this like little commune. And after like X amount of years, they only produce like one garbage bag worth of garbage for the entire, like, you know, little population of people. And that would, you know, prevent overpopulation and, like, global warming, so.
Right, right.
And, you know.
I hear you. That makes sense to me. Matt Damon. So how was it?
Yeah. Really good. The only reason I bought it was because when I was on the plane, I didn't see, like, the last 10 minutes of the movie, and I was like, God damn it, because we just landed. So I need to finish this movie.
Oh my god, really? Is that why you bought it?
Yes.
Well, I may watch it because you bought it and I have your iTunes and I wanted to see it anyway.
Yeah, go at it. Awesome. Yeah, it's a pretty good movie. I enjoyed it. It's awesome. Not going to be like, you know, it's not going to make you think all that much, but it's really good. Definitely check it out.
All right. Cool. I'm glad you liked it. I mean, maybe I'll like it too now because I know I got bad reviews when it came out. But fuck them. Maybe it's still a feel-good movie. I don't know.
Look, it's not going to be, you know, a thinker, but it's definitely a good watch. Okay, yeah, no. So the last one I saw is actually a documentary.
It's called
What We Started.
Yeah.
What?
Oh, I said it's the only one I never heard of, but continue.
Okay. Yeah. What We Started is a music documentary about dance music and, like, electronic dance music and all that stuff.
EDM.
Pretty much it's gives you the entire history of like dance music, like right after disco, and then, you know, it goes into the old school DJs of like the Chicago house music scene, the dance music scenes of like, you know, the 70s and 80s that also happened in Detroit at the same time, and goes all the way up to what's going on today where you have just, you know, DJs that come in with like a like a USB thumb drive and have their entire playlist on there and just, you know, push a space bar and start playing everything. It also goes through like the whole like 90s, you know, rave stuff and all the drug history and all that stuff. So pretty interesting.
So it's like an overall encyclopedia thing of throughout the years, not like a specific.
It's half of that. It's pretty much just giving you everything. And kind of like how it was like a small thing that people were a part of, and now it's huge. You have these, like, you know, huge festivals that, you know, garnished like tens and thousands of people, where before it was just a couple hundred, you know, in like some warehouse or something.
Right.
And it's not only like, it didn't only talk about the DJs, and it interviewed like the promoters of the time. You know, the guys that were literally risking everything just to get some kind of show going.
Well, that's cool.
And then it talks about how, like, right now you had this new kid, Martin Garrix, who, like, kind of came into the scene, like, I think about 2 years ago. And within 2 years, he's, like, the number one person, like, because of his song. And, like, how he went and he's, like, producing music and he's, like, making music for all these pop stars, because now all the pop stars want this whole like dance music vibe in their, you know, song, so they could get like that one big hit. Because
right,
I think David Guetta was doing that with a lot of people. So everyone's like, well, shit, these songs are really good. So everyone's reaching out to all these other, you know, like DJs and producers to like, hey, let me get a pop hit on my next thing. So, interesting. I mean, I'm not that big of a fan of dance music, but it's still
But hey, it's a informational, you know, it's almost like, it's basically a historical documentary up till now and an update. It's pretty good. Those work for exactly the interest that the title or the description say, and I'm glad it did its job well. So that's What We Started, and where is that on?
I rented it on iTunes. It was like a 99-cent rental.
Awesome. So everyone check it out there. Roth, I know you have nothing this time around, right, for recent discoveries?
Ralph's not here right now.
You are here.
He will be back next week.
You're his
possibly.
Hologram.
yeah, please leave a message.
I've only seen one movie. This is a movie that I omitted from last time because last time I had too many titles, so I'm like, oh, I'll just take this one out. But I'll add it today because I only have one today. Is the Descent Part 2 or the Descent 2. Anyone seen the original Descent?
Yes. I think we all seen it.
Yeah.
Did we see it in theaters? I don't remember. Maybe?
Yes, we did.
Nice.
We did definitely see it in theaters.
I love that movie to death. I really like it. Anyway, so the Descent 2, which is I found it on Netflix, and you know, so you can watch it there, everybody. And it came out in 2005, the original, who made Neil Marshall's career. I always forget that. Anyway, and yes, the Descent Part 2 came out in 2009, and it stars the same. So I mean, I guess I have to say spoiler alert, right, for the first movie. But essentially, the first movie ends with all of them except for one of them, right? Only one of them makes it out. And what you find out in this one is that it's like the day after or 2 days after. And the girl who ran off and betrayed her friend, remember, stabbed her in the leg, right, to leave her to die. She still made it out. She goes back in there. She went through some trauma looking for her. And they go back in there with, like, a spelunking group and a sheriff, right, and two deputies, and they don't know what's going on because she conveniently had, like, traumas, amnesia, or whatever, and so she doesn't know where she's being taken to back as hell, essentially, and only when she's down there does she remember everything, and it's already too late, and they're being attacked by these monster creatures, and you find out more of the history of how they ended up there, which is cool, and the idea of the sequel is the concept of coming back, and that this badass chick that we thought died down there in the last movie is still alive and kicking ass and taking names. You know, it's there. It's a cool concept, but the movie is, woof, like, the craft is way less than the, like, there are some pretty schlocky moments that almost make it B-movie horror, which is not to say it's a terrible thing, but compared to the first one, which wasn't trying to do that, it does fail for me. But it has some cool moments. And it has an ending that, oh, the ending's the worst. It has one of those endings, guys, where, remember this, when in the 2000s and even the 90s, there was this trend in horror movies where they have to end it with something, like, really nefarious happening, like, out of the blue, something mysterious you didn't think about. This has that problem, and it's stupid as fuck. It's like they negate the entire movie just to throw in this curve ending, and that doesn't make any sense, and I didn't like it. So it's like a mixed bag. If you want to, it's a cool concept. Like I said, the same actors are in it, so that's cool. And they do it justice as far as they can do. So yeah, watch it if you're into horror. Otherwise, don't really watch it. The first one is the best. Just watch the first movie, which is also on Netflix. So,
all right,
check
so
that out.
I will not watch it then.
Right. And now we're gonna take a quick break. When we come back, we'll do our first review of the evening, which is gonna be what, Luke?
I forgot the order.
Ant-Man and the Wasp.
I'm going to say it's going to be Ant-Man.
Yes. Ant-Man and the Wasp. All right, guys, stay with us.
So, how long have you been Ant-Man again?
Not long. It just sort of happened.
I wish I could fight bad guys like you.
I seem to mess it up almost every time.
Maybe you just need someone watching your back. Like a partner.
Ant-Man and the Wasp. As Scott Lang balances being both a superhero and a father, Hope Van Dyne and Dr. Hank Pym present an urgent new mission that finds the Ant-Man fighting alongside the Wasp to uncover secrets from their past. Dun-dun-dun.
Definitely dun-dun-dun. Alright, yeah. Cool. Ant-Man and the Wasp. It's, I think it finally... Is it number one still? But it beat out whoever was last. I think it was Jurassic World on the box office.
I don't know.
I think it did.
Do we have any other huge movies coming out?
I'm sure there is.
Action.
It doesn't matter. I was just curious. I think it did beat. I finally got to number one at some point. Anyway, Ant-Man and the Wasp.
I don't know. What do you check there?
You want me to check that?
Box Office Mojo.
Yeah.
No. Oh, wait. No, it's actually Hotel Transylvania 3.
Ooh. Wow. Yeah, that's why they keep making those movies, because fucking kids love those movies, man.
You got to look at it this way. Now that I have a kid and I take him to the theaters.
Yeah.
There is...
Two tickets?
I took him to the movies once a week. There's very little movies that come out for kids. Like, back to back. So, you either rewatch movies with kids, like I saw Incredibles twice. Not that I'm complaining.
Right.
But I took him to see Ant-Man already, and he wanted to go to the theaters again, and boom, Hotel Transylvania. I have no interest in watching this movie.
Do you think parents often take children more than, like, once a week as a regular thing?
I think, yes, especially with those Tuesdays in the summer.
Yeah, I guess.
It is, because it's something you could do. Something you get your kids out of the house, you know, get them entertained for 2 hours.
Without you needing to do anything.
Without you not seemingly spending too much money.
Right, right. I guess that makes sense. That carries. But either way, they make a lot of money. But not all kids' movies make a lot of money. That's also my point. So, all right, cool. So,
there's a lot of clunkers out there.
Yeah, and for all we know, Transylvania is a great series.
I saw the first one. It's all right.
I don't remember. I've never seen it, but I've seen clips. So, Luke, what are your thoughts on this movie, man, on Ant-Man and the Wasp, and comparatively to the first one, you know?
Okay, so this is perfect, because I did like this movie, as I pretty much liked every single Marvel Universe movie. Mm-hmm. The only thing that kind of didn't like as much, the first one was like this awesome like heist flick.
Okay.
And that was like the best part of it, because I did not expect it to be a heist flick. So I was hoping that this one was going to somehow also become like a heist flick, and it kind of wasn't.
Well, no, it's kind of hard to justify using a tech as powerful as what they have to do a heist that kind of works only once, you know? I mean, don't you think so?
I don't know.
You can't use it to rob a diamond. I
felt they could have made it.
I mean, you can, but it's not as cool. Or
still, kind of still wanted it.
Yeah, I hear you. You were missing it.
So I just felt that the plot, you know, I'm sure for them, for what, you know, was important or whatever, wasn't that great for me.
Okay.
But it's still a very enjoyable movie.
That carries, I think. That carries with people's thoughts about it. I think I've heard that before, for sure. Is that your general first impressions?
Yes.
Raph, what about you? What are your thoughts? Chief?
What about me? What
the fuck do you think of this movie, man?
Oh, okay.
Can you feel
the
love?
Not the best Marvel Universe, cinematic universe movie, but...
It beats Iron Man 3.
And 2,
yeah.
But this movie, it was missing something for me. I had a problem with the villain. Although we have, I guess, there's like two villains in this movie. Sort of.
Yeah.
So, Ghost?
Yeah, I had a problem with the Ghost. It was basically useless. And... I had that was the problem I had, and they made, I think the movie hyped it up a lot with Ant-Man and the Wasp, and I saw not that much wasping, or maybe,
I mean,
not as much.
They look like white Anglo-Saxon Protestants to me.
They do.
Okay.
But not like that.
Okay.
I just didn't see that, like, what I felt the movie was going to be is more like of this joint team, you know, actually doing working together, and it wasn't that. So I guess I didn't get what I expected either from the movie. I knew it wasn't going to be a heist movie again, because you did it already. But yeah, I don't know. It was missing something else for me. But overall, I still didn't like the movie. I didn't hate it. I just felt like it was missing some stuff, and in a non-shocking turn of events, the villain sucked.
And you're talking about just specifically Ghost, or both of them? The
mainly Ghost for me, but...
And Walton Goggins too, or no?
Walton Goggins was just Walton Goggins. At least they let him be himself. Or what it looked like to be himself.
I hear you.
Are you talking about the guy from The Shield?
Yes. Yeah. And Justified. Yeah. And
dude, that guy is always... He's just typecasted. If you see him, he's going to be the bad guy.
Yeah, he's not in all of them. Like, well, I'm trying to think of that. He was in a show that he was a good guy in.
The Shield.
No, he was definitely not a good guy. The Shield?
See how that turned out?
Everyone in that show is a moral gray character. You know?
But come on, dude. Anytime you see him, you know he's going to be the bad guy. I want to see a movie where he's the nicest person ever.
Well, not the nicest one, but he turned out to be a pretty heroic character in the Hateful Eight. Yeah, you guys are remembering it now.
No, I remember it.
The Hateful Eight. He played the sheriff-to-be.
Right. It was still a racist.
I didn't see Hateful Eight.
They were all racist back then.
Did I?
You better have. We saw it in theaters.
We saw it in...
That special screening thing?
Yeah.
Remember? The 70mm whatever?
Yeah.
Do you not remember the movie?
Okay.
Jesus, did you see Jaws
or not?
I do
remember. I just...
Sorry.
I think it's still a morally gray area for anyone in that movie.
Well, yeah, but he was the heroic character. He saved the movie at the end. Spoiler alert for Hateful Eight, I guess. Anyway. Okay, anyway, it doesn't matter. But you're right. Generally, he's a bad guy. Yes, I'm with you. So my two cents is that I generally agree with you guys. Maybe the order of things are different. Like, Ghost didn't bother me as much as Walton Goggins' bad character. Like... His involvement in the movie, it bothered me more than Ghost. But there were things about Ghost that bothered me that I can see how it bothered you more, Ruff, than the norm. So, like, it's just a little different. I think the movie's a lot of fun. Kind of like...
That's for sure.
It has a very Deadpool 2 feel where, like, I didn't like some of the stuff they were trying to do to, like, ante up from the first one, you know?
Right.
But the movie's so much fun that I don't care... Because I had fun watching it, and I can't wait to watch it again.
Yeah, Leo liked watching it.
Yeah. Oh, dude. And Paul Rudd is... they do some really good gags with him, you know, being, like, toddler size, for example, and another one where, like... He has some great gags for himself. Like, he has a great physicality in his facial expressions. Really, he really amped it up, I think, in this movie compared to the first one. So I think in that respect, I think the comedy might even be better, the physical comedy in this movie, last one. Yes, physical. So it does some stuff better, and the action is pretty dynamic when it gets in there. I'm talking about the car stuff, the car chasing in San Francisco. I'm talking about the whole reactor stuff. The science in the movie is ridiculous. But I'm glad they don't spend too much time trying to justify why they get to be as cool or as grifty as it can be. But it does spend some time doing it, so expect that, guys. Other than that, though, it's a lot of fun. I like the chemistry between Evangeline Lilly and Paul Rudd. Actually works. Did not think it would. And I saw the first one again recently, and they treat her way better in this movie, I think, than the last one. Because last one, she was so standoffish, and it looked like that movie was saying, like, you're a girl, you can't be the hero, so I'm going to give it to this weird guy. And in this one, she's way better than him. And they let her be better than him. I like that overall. Let's see what other things. You mentioned a problem, Ruff, that I was agreeing. I agree with you.
Lack of what's it called?
Oh yeah, chemistry,
or the lack of just time with them.
Yeah, for a partnership intro movie, they didn't do much partnering. I wanted more of that. I wanted to see, but maybe that's what the third one's going to be more about. I hope they fix that.
Right, but like that's what the whole thing. Like, the movie was Ant-Man and the Wasp.
It should have been called
Ant-Man Introducing the Wasp.
Yeah, that would have been fun.
No, Ant-Man 2. The Wasp appears briefly.
There's a lot of dots in between.
With dot, dot, dot. Jesus, honey, can you get up on top of that roof or not? Okay. Anyway, I have some problems for sure. It's not a great movie, but I think it's great to have fun. A great movie for fun. So that's my two cents. I almost feel like we should just get to spoilers now because I think we said everything we could. But, Luke, what else do you want to say about the movie before we get into that kind of thing?
Not so fast.
Or whatever you want to talk about.
Kind of felt weird that they really didn't mention anything, happening in the Infinity War. universe.
I actually really liked that. I liked that.
Like, I was cool with it.
I liked that they just kind of, they did their own thing. Everything was happening in between. And I like how it ends also. And we get an explanation of what happened in between. Because they've always done their own thing. And they kind of justified the answers of like, yeah, I'm a secondary hero. Right, if you want to look at it, right? Or maybe even a third tier hero, if you want to look at it that way. I did something nice. I did something bad. I'm getting punished for it because I went this route. And that's why I have no communication with anything, and it kind of makes sense. Like that's why it still holds its own as a movie without having to include any other hero in it.
No, I get that, but my thing is like they could have just mentioned. I mean, Thanos,
like new screens on the background.
A lot of shit happening in New York.
But that's what I say. That's why it ends well. Because it ends right there.
Right. Nah, I just felt, you know, it should have been like, hey, something's going on in New York. I can't go help them.
But that's how it ends.
Well, the idea of the after-credit ending. The Avengers, the Infinity War Part 1, right? Of course, this is what it is, right? Part 1 takes place over, 2 days? The whole thing? Like, it doesn't really... They travel to Star, sure, but it's like different groups. And they all come together on the second day. In Wakanda, right? So, like, I guess they didn't have time to really, like, look over and, oh, like, shit, we should really do something. And so I didn't feel too bad about it, but I didn't really think about it. I was glad they didn't mention it.
I have a question. We're in spoilers, right?
We can be, but I want to make sure that we all say.
Might as well. Let's fucking go spoilers.
I mean, Luke, is that cool with you?
We're definitely in spoilers.
Okay, fine, let's do it. Let's go spoilers for this movie that I didn't know we were in spoilers and starting right now.
Is Scott Lang? Well, see, that's complicated. Because when I first met Scotty, he was in a bad place. And I'm not talking about Cell Block D. His wife had just filed for divorce. And I was like, damn, homie, she dumped you when you're on lockup? And he was like, yeah, I know. I thought I was going to be with her forever. But now I'm all alone. And I was like, damn, homie, you know what? You got to chin up because you'll find a new partner. But you know what? I'm Luis. And he says, you know what? I'm Scotty. And we're going to be best friends.
Okay, hold on. I like a good story as much as the next person, but what in the hell does this have to do with where Scott Lang is?
I'm getting there.
You put a dime in him, you gotta let the whole song play out.
He's like human jukebox.
Mute your mic. Okay, so where did you think this movie ended in the Infinity War timeline? Luke.
Right when Thanos was fucking up New York?
No. See, that I got it more like right when they came in to attack. Not when Thanos is effing up New York, is when they came in to attack that first time with the ship. So the day of the first day. Yeah. I'm taking it as the first day. Not Thanos hasn't even arrived there yet. So not everyone's dying. They didn't say everybody was dying, right? I thought they just looked up and stuff was happening. And I thought that it was like they just saw the ship land or something.
Mm-hmm.
So now if it's after the Thanos stuff, what's it called? Then I would say, yeah, we could have probably got a little bit more, right? If everyone's already like, you know, phasing out, we should have got more stuff. I would agree with you. But... not much more than like a quick simple here or there, and it is like Oscar said, it is like a 2 day span or maybe something around that timeline. But other than that, I mean, I saw it as an it's like right when they arrive, and it's they get like this, they get the whole thing interrupted. That's what ended up happening. That's what I saw. I thought it was a pretty cool ending too, and kind of is going to explain that he's going to kind of stay alive, I think. I like the ending overall. I know you're a little bummed out about it.
Nah.
Also, can I say something that you guys might find wrong? Is that I think the action in this movie is better than the Infinity War action.
You think
the action is better in the Infinity War movie than...
No.
And, better and, in this one than in the Infinity
yes,
War.
Yes, that.
I don't know. That scene when they're on Titan is pretty badass.
Yeah, but that's one. And I think they could have... now that I think back on it, like, what was creative? I don't know what was a super creative thing about it. I'm not 100%, but I don't know. Like, I remember scenes, I don't know. Fine, the Titan thing. But there's like five awesome ones here. I can't tell you a second one that I like as much in the Infinity War that I remember that well. I don't know. I feel like this one had more fun with the characters and what they were able to do. You're right, Ralph. We didn't get them both together doing awesome things combined. But separately, when they were doing things, it was more dynamic. It was more fun. It looks like they had like creative juices flowing when they were making those scenes.
Yeah, I mean, you got to... I don't want to forgive Avengers here, but you're getting dedicated time to these characters to let them do. It's only them doing the action,
right? But those, like, you know, you're supposed to combine characters you never seen them combine before. Like, that's part of the draw of the action in that movie, Infinity War, is that we get to see Strange and that dude with the face, Star Lord, and
dude with the face,
and Iron Man. You know what combinational thing, and they do it with like one shot. Thing when they do that, you know, like, what will we do when he arrives, that plan thing, it's too fast and it goes by too quick and it's not enough. And this one, you get like multiple examples of both of them doing things in so many creative ways, you know. I don't know, I felt like this one was, the action was dynamically better for me.
I just think in the Avengers you get, sorry to completely shut you down, Luke, if you were going to say something. But I think in the Avengers, you get the clear show of, the clear display of, if you go against Thanos yourself, you're going to lose. But if you go against together, you actually have a shot of winning. Mm-hmm. Right? And you get that, and you only get the two times when you see them together against them, right? And it's really 1.5.
Bad lotting.
And then the first time, and then the other times you get them during, by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the beginning of the movie with Thor. So,
wait, what is that excuse exactly?
Because you say there was lack of action or lack of teamwork, however you're saying it like that.
No, just lack of better action than this movie in general, I'm saying. I think this one had more, or at least more inventive action than the other. And that's what I'm saying. And I think the only reason, what's his name, Walton Goggins' character... is in this movie, which is the reason I hate him in this movie, is just to have goons around so they can fight goons. So they can fight multiple rounds of people instead of one ghost. I think that's the only reason. I think Walton Goggins as an arms dealer with goons exists in this movie is just to have better action scenes, which makes it not a good enough reason to have him there, even though I enjoy the action. That's my problem with him as a villain. And yes, he plays the usual shticky villain, and... I don't think they let him be a real character the whole movie, personally. Bless you. You know, so that was my problem, now that we're talking about action scenes. So I don't know what you guys think about that. Does that make sense? Or do you guys not feel that way?
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
First, my opinion about the action. I think Infinity War had... I like the action on Infinity War because it's just a much broader scale. It was like more epicness, especially like the whole Wakanda scene, where it's just balls out war. But the action in Ant-Man was different because it was obviously smaller scale, and it had more fun with it, with, you know, the whole size shifting and everything, and like when the Wasp was like, you know, running like through the knife as the guy threw it at her. It was some cool stuff.
The Soul Shaker.
It was like focused on like a one-on-one fight. Yeah, I mean, here you have like a one-on-one fight and for most of the scenario. Whereas, you know, Infinity War, you had this just grand scale attacking kind of thing, you know?
Right.
But both are equally good.
No. Because I think you got the same scene in Lord of the Rings when they charge another battled orcs thing. Not as much of a difference. I would say that the Infinity War there has more fun with it because I think that maybe the CGI is more... Okay, fine. Different styles. Sure. I don't want to keep arguing at this point. But what about the other thing I said about Walton Goggins?
Yeah, no. He's just there as another guy. I kind of get it. Yeah. Him and his henchmen.
I actually thought they were going to go with the route
makes
with him.
Makes sense.
where he had like the super powered weapons, like they did in Spider-Man.
Oh, with Keaton's character.
Yeah, with Keaton's character, exactly.
Oh, like he has like black market type things.
Right. I thought he was gonna have weapons like that, and it would have been like them going against that kind of thing. Because I thought he was gonna be bigger than I thought, and then he was a lot smaller, and then he was just kind of annoying.
Yeah, it's funny how he's for a very careful, secure, high priced black market dealer. All he thought about was selling other items, like his, like, I don't know, like you can make your own little adventures, probably, dude, with all this tech that you said that you're really good with handling and buying and selling. You could have done more with them. Our problem with Ghost, Ralph, coming out of the theater, or coming out of watching it and talking about it, I remember we talked about how Ghosts had this problem with Lawrence Fishburne's character, especially with him, where they did this back and forth about her, like basically what she thought of herself as a bad person or not. Like, is she a selfish person that will kill or do anything to other people if it's against them in order to achieve her goal, which is to live? Is it worth it for her to do that, or is she more like a good person that's stuck in a bad situation? And I felt that the movie didn't know what she was until the very end, which is annoying.
They give you a small hint of her being a good person when they bring up, she's like, oh, what's his face has a daughter, I'm gonna go where it hurts him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then she's like, well, if you're gonna do that, this is the first time we get the interaction, banter with each other, with them.
Yeah.
She's like, he's like, I'm not gonna help you, like, we're not here to get other people harmed, like, we're trying to get you fixed. That's, you know, hurting an innocent person doesn't help you. So, like, and she says, fine, I'll figure out a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And you're like, okay, so she's not, like, 100% evil. She's not Cruella de Vil.
No, I guess not. But the thing is, I felt annoying that they had to put in all these...
I do agree. Yeah, I don't.
...plot things just to keep her from immediately winning or immediately losing, you know? Like,
right.
And the first try, she tried to steal stuff.
Yeah, I also like how...
also, why
like
can't you just wait for them to finish and then do it? I mean, if you'd waited the first time,
right,
it would have been done a long time before.
What's really funny, again, another
yeah,
another thing in a Marvel Universe plot problem,
yeah,
where it's just like, hey, if you guys just had a simple conversation about like, hey, let me go first,
yeah,
and then you go, and
I'm
then we'll be
out
good.
Of existence. Can you just give me a minute, you know? Dude, right? And also they miss an opportunity to make a message... to give like a lesson for this movie, because you know a lot of kids watch these movies, obviously. The message or the lesson, which is very Disney-like, would have been like, you know, don't be an asshole, because Hank Pym must have been the biggest asshole in his career to allow to people never to talk to him about their plans to steal from him. Because that old-timer friend, Lawrence Fishburne, if he didn't treat him so harshly and an asshole in his younger life, he probably would have like, you know, just talk to him.
Well, he would have seeked Hank's
opinion
for help.
And help.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, thinking that he never would help from the beginning led to all these problems, like, yeah, 50 years later or whatever. So, like, it's, why don't you just make it a lesson about just don't be a dick, and then life won't fuck you this way, you know? That's what I'm saying. But I think they miss an opportunity in the lesson, right?
Well, I think the lesson in this movie is if you have really cool friends, you can get away from things from the FBI.
Yeah. Also, there's a major stark difference between the first film and the second film. For example, in the first film, Bobby Cannavale's character, who is the husband to his ex-wife, mother of the child, he is like a clear foil for Ant-Man, and is kind of a dick, more than a dick. You know, he's a cop who's thinking that Paul Reiser is going to slip up again and go to jail. And in the second one, hugs everywhere. He is a PG guy. He loves them. He's understood them. He's like, I love this criminal. And then take Evangeline Lilly. I said it earlier. She was like a total, like, cold-hearted looking, not really, some acting, of course, bitch all the time, black hair, too. Like, it's different. I think it was just different hair tone. And, like, this one, totally opposite, friendly everywhere. And also the thieves, they don't look thievy no more. They look like business-like. What's with everyone being switched around in this movie? It's the total opposite of people. Anyway,
it's Ant-Man. they're associated with Ant-Man. You got to be nicer to him. He's one of the Avengers.
Yeah. Not yet, I guess.
I mean, oh, and the convicts, you know, they're trying to go legit, so.
Yeah, no, I know. I get it.
I like where they say, yeah, you know, Cap called me. He was like, oh, Cap. Now he's called Cap.
Yeah, Captain with just a N, not a T-A-N.
Right.
Captain.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, the technology that some of these people have, they should be in the Avengers more than fucking that flying dude. Right? I mean, am I wrong? No, right?
Falcon,
yeah. Just saying. This guy can be big and small. That's pretty cool. I'll take that over flying. I'm just saying. Put the list of prioritize, you know. Okay. Anything else you guys want to talk about? There's some other stuff we haven't mentioned, of course, but I don't know if you guys want to get to them. So what do you guys think? Well, not everyone at once.
All right, I got something. So, I actually like how they've always been improving on the technology, the PIM tech. Mm. So, and since they're improving on it, there's obviously a lot of kinks with it. That's a big thing in the movie, with the suit.
Mm-hmm.
But that actually kind of goes back to where they did this crazy technology thing where they can actually do a whole building now. Like, this is with everything in it. It's not just one item, you know. So they do the car, they do the building.
Oh, you know, the matchstick car thing.
Yeah,
that was really cool.
It's really smart.
Matchbox.
I really like that.
Yeah, I like the idea that you could travel and carry everything with you, and without a problem.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that part.
I do like the Altoids can.
I agree with you.
That's the Altoids can. That was pretty cool.
Yes.
Yeah, you're like, what's in that damn can? But that's got to be pretty sweet. As soon as you pop it open, the technology's going to, I mean, just make them big again.
Yeah. It's really inventive stuff. I like it. It's very creative. Another thing with...
Great product placement. I bought 7 tins.
Really?
No, I don't do Altoids at all.
I do. I Me use either. Altoids for work.
Yeah, that's a good reason. So I was going to say also, Michelle Pfeiffer, what do you guys think of her role and her inclusion to this franchise, whatever?
How fucking convenient she's still alive.
Not a lot of screen time.
No, but she's been doing a lot lately.
They can't afford her.
Mother a little bit.
They can't afford her, that's why.
And that murder movie.
No, of course they can't.
What's the going rate?
No, I liked it. She was all right. When I first saw her, because you see her in past version, I was like, whoa, CG.
Dude, they're really good with that.
Yeah.
Can I tell the difference between Catwoman and that version?
No. I mean,
you know what I mean.
Tell some differences.
You know what I mean.
But I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nonetheless, I was like, man, if that's how she looks, she looked good. And obviously, you see the older one, I was like, that makes
she
sense.
She still looks good.
She still looks good, yeah. But you saw, like, that makes sense.
Yes. For an ocelot, yeah.
I think it was... Some of the best parts was when
I get it.
Okay, you got
Paul Rudd's character.
Sorry, what?
Was trying to when some of the best parts actually for me were when Paul Rudd was trying to actually was playing the part of the Michelle Pfeiffer.
That was a good one.
And like the everything, just the manners, and it's funny because you have
no,
it's like the layers of all that.
That's what I'm saying. Paul Rudd steps it up in the physical comedy, the way he was like emulating her and the touches and the acts and the, you know, the voice, obviously. I think it was really good. That's what I'm saying. He really pulled it off.
It's very believable.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And funny at the same time. It's very, very, very slapsticky, too, in a way. Obviously, I always like Michelle Pfeiffer in movies. She should be in every movie. It was very shoehorned in, though. They did like really didn't want they wanted to leave no room for anyone asking in the moment. How did you feed yourself in there? You know, or you can't even take the mask off because as soon as you do, you die. Right? That's the whole point of having the whole suit. You know, things like that. But yeah, quantum magic, totally into it. So now she's a goddess. Awesome.
Unobtainium.
Right. Is that Avatar?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I can't wait to see if they play with that some more, and hopefully they stick by the same rules now, because it seems like they bended or maybe even broke some of the rules from the first movie to explain some of her actions and the fact that she's alive. But whatever. I like how the first movie immediately led to the second one, because him coming back from the microscopic world, whatever they called it, means that she might still be alive, and at least they can try, because they didn't think they could try before. The subatomic world, right? And that was cool. But I would say that in the first movie, though, it was definitely a little more inventive how they did the subatomic world than this one. This one was just more like landscapey. But it was still pretty fun to watch him do it. Anything else on this movie, guys? Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Oh. It's pretty funny, the truth serum part.
Yeah.
That had to have been the best person to put truth serum in, was Michael Peña's character.
Yeah, a lot of people still really liked his that joke he did with the truth serum when he was telling that story. I saw it a little played out, but I still liked it, of course, because it's Michael Peña doing
well,
it.
Well, if it felt like it was the appropriate time to use it. They didn't They didn't use it anywhere else, so it was fine for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Anything else, guys?
Nope.
Go see it. Another hour on it? Got it. All right. That's our review for Ant-Man and the Wasp. We're going to take another break here. When we come back after this clip, we will review our second film of the evening, which is You Were Never Really Here, you know, which I can say about my childhood and Luke's presence. Stay with us, please.
I'm going to ask you some questions. How many are there?
One guy inside the front door, second guy on the top floor.
After the tone, please leave a message.
It's done.
A man called. He wants to see you right away.
State Senator Albert Vatto. His teenage daughter's missing.
What's the lead?
He got an anonymous text with an address.
I've heard of these places. They said you were brutal.
I can be.
I want you to hurt them.
You Were Never Really Here. A traumatized veteran, unafraid of violence, tracks down missing girls for a living. When a job spins out of control, Joe's nightmares overtake him as a conspiracy is uncovered, leading to what may be his death trip or his awakening.
Yeah.
Starring Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah, who was that again?
Joaquin Phoenix.
Okay, all right. Did you get out of your system now?
No.
No, probably not.
You're the one that told me about that.
Yes, I did.
You created a monster.
Which I got from a friend. He used to say, my friend told me, you know, Joaquin Phoenix sounds like a knife being unsheathed. And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, Joaquin? And I'm like, oh, that's pretty funny. And I told it to everybody, and here we are today. Anyway, so before I ask any questions, Luke, what did you make me watch?
I made you watch a movie that I knew nothing about, and it just popped up on iTunes. It's like, oh yeah, I think a new release or something.
It's an Amazon Studios movie.
Yeah. And looked like it got very favorable reviews, so let's give it a shot.
Yeah. You gave it a shot. It's good. It's like also the third film from Lynn Ramsey, who like barely makes a movie. And she's finally popped out another one. I think her last movie was with that girl, what's her name, Tilda Swinton, right? That Kevin movie. We Need to Talk About Kevin. And that's been a while. Mm-hmm. I think that was the last movie. And if that's the case, she's been hibernating, making this one.
Yeah, and she did some short films, I think, after that, though.
Oh, good. I'm glad she was still working. I haven't seen them.
Yeah.
Did you...
And I guess she's...
Yeah.
Oh, she's also going to be doing, I guess, a modern adaptation of Moby Dick.
Huh.
So, she'll be working on something.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
I'm trying to imagine Lynn Ramsey doing Moby Dick. That's all.
A modern adaptation,
Whatever that means, yeah.
It's going to be set in space.
So the whale will have, like, chips on it, like computer chips?
No, the whale is a robot.
Oh, animatronic. Right.
Probably it says an alien.
Right. There
an
you go.
An alien. Mm-hmm. Right. From Palladius. All right. So enough with that, you know, BSing. What do you think of this movie, Luke? Because it's fucked up. Like you, so I assume it's up your alley, but what do you think?
Oh, yeah, it is definitely one of the weirder, more fucked up movies that I've seen. Like, Joe, the name of the guy that Joaquin plays, he's very fucked up. I mean, he's obviously had, like, a history of abuse. He's got some awesome training from, I guess, what was he, like an FBI or something? Oh, military and FBI?
Yeah, I definitely
this guy's
FBI.
Just a fucking,
I saw
this guy's a killer
in one of the flashbacks.
So, yeah, he's been through some shit. And he's a pretty deranged individual, but he's doing the best he can with it.
Dude, were you able to, like, I guess maybe an important question for everybody here will be, like, were you guys able to find sympathy for this character? And if so, did you guys feel like, was it pushed on you? Like shoved down your throat? Or did you feel it naturally? Did you feel, Luke?
I'm going to say it was pushed.
Okay.
They have a lot of flashbacks and a lot of things that, you know, will go back to his childhood with the abusive father. And I felt like there was just a little bit too much.
Okay. Ralph, how do you feel about that question?
I feel like the movie was trying to make it feel seamless. Like this is something that our character is thinking about in the moment and we're trying to get in the person's mindset. But some of it did feel forced.
Yeah, I agree. Seems like we all agree similar things, probably for different reasons, though. But, yeah, I do feel like it was virtually shoved down our throats the same way he, you know, swings with his hammer kind of thing.
Yeah.
Going to a hardware store, never look as menacing as Joaquin Phoenix buying a fucking hammer.
And some duct tape and all that.
And duct tape, yeah, yeah. And then don't ever ask him to take a picture with your friends. So weird, man. No, I get it. There's a lot of this movie. I like the way the movie treats memory. It feels very similar to some of the way memory treats me. Like, it just comes in flashes. Something will remind you, or like a thought, a train of thought in your head will lead you to a memory, right?
There's two movies this year that we've seen like that.
What was the other one?
The Tale.
The Tale. You're right. Also a very nice, nifty way to treat memory. Very different, though. But yes. Mm-hmm. But also kind of the same. Have you seen The Tale yet, Luke?
Tale as in like T-A-L-E?
Yes.
Or
if you have to know, it's Tale. You don't have seen it yet.
No, I have not. I didn't even know this was a thing.
Asking what spelling it is saying that you haven't seen it. It's a nice way of saying that. It's on HBO. It's one of those specials that we reviewed on a pinch, and it was really good. Anyway.
I mean, what? There is a 2002 movie called The Tale.
Oh, I'm
T-A-I-L.
Sure. There's so many tales.
The Tale, Five Goes West.
There's also a movie called The Tale Job.
Ew. Sounds like a furry documentary. Yeah. Maybe that. I don't know. I don't judge. It's fine. Okay. So I think this movie treats memory very cool. But I do think that it does a lot to... I don't know if it's doing it for this reason, but it feels like in the moment. It feels like it is trying mm-hmm. to make us empathize or sympathize with a character in a sea of characters that are... I mean, he's the only real character, but... with a character that's just so brutal and violent and non-conforming and, you know, antisocial and name all the stuff, right? All the things that make a lead. It's almost like the movie is like a challenge. Like here, Lynn Ramsey, can you make a movie with an unsympathetic, uncaring, uncharismatic leading man? And she's like, I will try. And
why didn't she come and cast me?
Well, you know, unfortunately, she wasn't asked also without acting talent.
Right.
Right. So
who can grow a beard?
Right. Who can grow a beard the way? Yeah. Can you grow a beard like that, Luke? All right, guys. Sorry about that. Technical difficulties. Looks like Martha's Vineyard, not a great spot for Audacity, apparently. All right. So we're going to use this opportunity to make fun of Luke's ability to record and to just go into spoiler session now. I know we didn't give all the thoughts here, but we can just say real quick, do we recommend this movie? And if not, why not? But otherwise, we can continue to spoilers. Raf, what do you think? Do you want
to
recommend
this movie.
Okay.
But it's an interesting topic.
Definitely.
So, meh.
For me, it's like a, you know, like not a hard yes, but not a soft one either. Somewhere in between, like a regular stiff yes. Anyway, yes, I guess. Overall, yes. Luke?
I would recommend it, but it's got to be to the proper audience, like you two. So,
I don't think you two would like this song. Or, I'm sorry, the song. I don't think you two would like this movie or any submarine. Oh, you meant us two.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, you're so funny.
I know. I try. All right, spoiler session for You Were Never Really Here. Were we really, really here? Were we ever really here? Starting right now.
You have kids, Joe? No. Nina. Her name is Nina. I've heard of these places. Underage girls.
Senator, if she's there, I'll get her.
Cleary said you were brutal.
I can be.
All right. So, okay. So, Raf, elaborate more on the soft yes, on the maybe yes. Is it just that forcing what we're talking about the?
No, it's a mix. It's a mix of things.
Okay.
The topic itself, with it being about kidnapping and child slavery, not pornography, but
trafficking.
Probably worse than pornography, but no, they both involve.
Yes,
prostitution.
Yeah, sex trafficking.
Sex trafficking. Yeah.
So it's a hard topic to bring up in anything, and then to bring it up.
What's your favorite sex trafficking movie?
it's hard to just wrap your mind around it, and especially how it's the way it made it seem is like he's getting people from who are continuously in sex traffickers or ransom and stuff like that. It's really weird.
Right. My understanding is that he's like a very low-key dude who like left the FBI, has no job, no like legal standing, and he just takes care of his mom, right? And he on the down low, he's like through the criminal underworld or whatever, he gets recruited into getting back kidnapped people, or not just sold into slavery type things, but just kidnapped for ransom kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, what's hard also is you're getting this
missing children.
Well, you're getting the topic of the movie is that, and then you're getting this like memory flashback thing that's kind of forced on you, but it's like a PTSD thing.
Yeah.
And you can obviously tell it's a mix of both PTSD and obviously like going through a traumatic experience at the moment. So like, and he's like getting a flashback or something that's, you know, it's not a near-death experience kind of moment, but it's like, oh, this reminds me of this, and that's what goes through his mind, you know.
He reminds, you know, like this Asian child asking me for a photograph on the street.
Right, exactly.
Reminds me of the crate of Asian girl women that he found as an FBI agent.
Yeah, I guess more like when he's doing like the action scenes.
Right. Well, that too. Yes.
And there's just like this weird. Yeah, it's kind of weird. That's why it's a little hard to recommend.
See, I see it's easier to recommend it for those reasons because I think it's showing off or showing PTSD or any of those words, those trigger words, really, that you just mentioned. I think it's doing a really good job of trying to show you not the feeling of it, but how it comes. You know, it's impossible to show us.
The problem is it's not a general audience's movie.
No, I'm not saying that.
And
no movie that's really is.
Saying, what I'm saying is hard to recommend to a normal person.
Yeah.
Because, to be honest with you, if I didn't watch movies like I do normally, or if I don't put attention to it, or if I don't put my two cents into watching a movie...
I mean, that's why we're reviewing it.
Right, exactly. Right. It's hard to... Are they doing this? Are they doing that?
Mm-hmm.
And while I was watching the movie, I was like...
I'm the sick fuck who wants just something new.
Right. And I was like... I'm watching the movie, and I'm like, is this like a PTSD flashback thing? Mm-hmm. Or is this like we're trying to get into the mindset? What are we doing here? And it was very confusing for me. And I watch a lot of movies, and we obviously review movies. So, I mean, it was hard. If it was hard for me, it's hard to recommend it to a regular person or average Joe.
I get what you did there. Because his name was Joe in the movie.
Sure.
Okay. Luke, how do you feel about this?
Hard sell of a movie, unless it's like you two. Maybe Jay might like it.
I don't know. Yeah.
I'm sure he would have, like, someone's face getting smashed in with a hammer because they're, like, fucking little children.
Yeah, I think the core principle of that, if I feel like that's something that'll definitely win people over if you're, like, ever trying to describe the movie to someone. Like, oh, what's this movie about? It's about this guy who kills people that get, you know, kidnapped children. He's like, awesome, sold. Where is it?
Right.
You know? And then you say, wait a second, though.
He's got a little PTSD.
Right. He's fucked up, and the movie's artistic. They don't, like, just show you the violence to be violent. They will show you why, you know, like, every time they show you violence, because there's a reason behind it. Anyway, but I see your point. Maybe he'll like it.
Right. You know what? This is a perfect movie for fathers of daughters.
Very specific demographic.
Right?
Yeah. No, I don't think so. Okay. But yes,
equality, mothers as well. They could go apeshit as well with the hammer.
Yes. They can go, my God, what is the movie? The famous ass movie.
Old Boy,
thank you.
As soon as I saw the hammer, I thought of Old Boy.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, honestly, Old Boy fucked it all up for future hammer usage for all movies. Like, you can't use a hammer. When Drive used a hammer, I'm like, what, are you trying to be Old Boy? And remember Drive? Right. He grabs a hammer for that one scene.
Oh.
And then this movie, too. Like, I got an Old Boy flashback. I'm like, come on. You can't. Old Boy fucked it all up for hammers. You can't use a hammer anymore. Nothing, ever.
Well, I mean,
you can't.
They did it in, like, such a stylish way.
Yeah, and they all do it differently, but, like, Old Boy did it first, bitch. Like, stylistically and awesome and memorable. So, like, you can't do it without being reminded, I'm saying, obviously, of Old Boy.
Sure.
Obviously, you can do whatever you want. Anyway, let's continue, Luke. So, like, are you, like, more in between Ruff and I? Like, I would recommend it to, I don't know, a lot of people. Not everybody. And obviously, I'm not saying, like, I actually do recommend movies to specific people. If people ask me a question, I will give them the answer to it. But, like... I wish we would just say, like, oh, yeah, Rob recommends 10 people every day. And we could say, based on that, we could actually give a ratio. But I don't do that. We don't do that. Life doesn't work that way. But I would say that it's not the easiest sell for a general audience, for sure. Definitely. I agree with you. And but I was not at all deterred. I mean, not to say not at all, but I wasn't deterred as much. Nor was I confused about the storytelling aspect of the memory and what its intentions were. At least I felt like I had a handle on it for the majority, if not all of it. But I can understand completely how you wouldn't for all the whole thing, at least for those parts where you don't know if it's mindset thing, maybe some sort of, like, jerking off pre, like, meditation memory thing so you can get in the mood. You don't know, right? My first thought was that when I first saw the first time, you know, the flashbacking. So, yeah, I understand Ralph completely. So, right. Luke, you seem to be in the between us, or am I wrong?
Yeah, probably.
So you're the cream in the Oreo.
That's the best part.
It is. You're also the whip.
Ooh, I'm like a double stuffed cream because I'm a big guy, too.
All hair was double stuffed.
Wow. Selective hearing again.
Wow. Okay. What else do you want to talk about this movie, Luke, besides the fact that you just picked it because Joaquin's in it?
Oh, like I said, it got favorable reviews. I checked like Rotten Tomatoes, so I was like,
no,
okay,
no,
you know?
I'm joking. I was just joking. I was
not
just
going in for a clunker.
I'm just opening a door for you to keep say something else about it. What else did you like about the movie, or did you find it just morally satisfying him killing lots of rapists and murderers and shit?
That was a big part of it. I like some of like the. Like just the close-up shots that they did, that they used. Like it made this like little regular things, like, you know, just taking away like this duct tape, putting it here. Oh, got a can of soda, gonna put it here. Just I don't know. It was weird, but it kind of like fitting for the character.
Yeah. Oh, you mean like the methodical nature, like of what he's trying to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like he's trying to, like, that's an easy sell for me. Like, to me, that reads as, like, he's trying to control aspects of this world that he feels no control over, right? That's, like, the, like, probably the easiest, obvious answer. I'm not sure if you guys can think of a different one. But, do you feel like that's the answer to that? Or do you feel like that's why he would do that kind of thing? Why he would be so methodical about where to put the duct tape and the hammer and whatever?
Yeah, because I wasn't sure, like, what he was doing with that car at first. Like, is he staging the car? Or, like, what, like, is he going to try to make it seem like someone else did this? I mean, who's going to say, like, hey, someone busted into my kiddie porn dungeon and took my little girls out?
Yeah.
But, you know.
I'm surprised he never like, follows up the news about, like, all these, you know, because that first kiddie dungeon, it's a, the slavery thing on the third floor where he busted in the first place, right? Before like shit hit the fan, right? I'm surprised that like none of this stuff is in the news that he checks up on. He only checked up on that governor. Well, but
that's because that's a big political figure, and it's not even linked to that.
No, I'm just surprised he doesn't check up. Like, I wasn't. That's not part of his like general thing, you know. Too because like
he's a hitman.
He's a big deal. No, I know. I say him, but like also like. We make sure, like, they don't say, like, on the news, like, yeah, we found hair fibers, you know? Like, or whatever.
Well, here's the thing. Who's going to report the crime?
Oh, I know. It's perfect. But I'm saying, though, that's, you know, you're saying all these murders, like, all they go unknown because they're all criminals?
Pretty much.
I know that this particular
pretty much just,
one
you know,
does.
Killing the bottom.
Yeah. So, anything on that? I don't know, kind of like cynical stuff. What about the nature of the criminal underground, underworld, that we get in this movie? Because shit hits the fan because he accidentally woke up a beast. Like, he actually, like, stepped on the toe of someone huge. Whereas before, he was probably just getting back on kidnappers. They were working on their own, right? As unrealistic as this movie feels and is, right, because it's just a movie, how realistic did that feel for you?
Well, it feels very scary that you can have a brothel-like thing or whatever.
In the middle of
a city.
Yeah.
In the middle of a nice neighborhood or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Which is true, actually.
And you're none the wiser. Right, exactly.
That shit happens. I read one of Niles up 2 years ago.
Yeah, I heard about that as well.
That was insane.
So you do have that. That's very scary. That's very realistic, or feels realistic. And I like that he took precautions, and that how the movie ties everything well together with the kid that found out where he lived on accident through the intermediary about where he gets his money from.
Yeah.
And because he always had a way to never, you know, to... He never wanted to be a direct. He wanted to do it through intermediaries. So
right,
they never knew
which makes sense.
It made sense. He did everything... Smart. He just like that one accident.
The one accident got that kid killed.
Even though he cut the ties, he just didn't cut it. I mean, he cut it as fast as he could, but it was just literally the next mission.
Yeah, but the guy didn't throw out the slip.
Yeah.
Right. Not yet. Anyway. Uh-huh. So they knew the information. And there you go. That's how they found out his mom and everything.
Right. Exactly.
That's fucked up. And his relationship with his mom is the. Do you think that's a pivotal? It has to be obviously the pivotal point for him. The point of no return for him was these cop criminals killing his mom.
They look like ex-military, right?
Well, one of them was, two of them were cops the first time they went to attack him, and he got away. And then this one, he looked like a detective. He seemed like one. That guy who shot in the gut.
The one that they were when he was at the...
At his house.
At the house. Not at his house.
No, I'm talking about his house.
Oh, his house.
Yeah, okay, yeah. It was his house with the mom. He lived with the mom, right?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I think he looked like a... I'm just saying, he looked like... He came off SVU and shit. So, like, do you think that was a point of no return? It seems like it is, and he just reminded himself when he was trying to, like, suicide.
Well, I think it is. I think after that, he just goes through the motions, and he's... Now he tries to figure out how to resolve this. So he goes to his contact's house, and that's when he gets into the fight that I was mentioning with the military guy. That he has this weird moment that they both lay down and they hold hands. That was after that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get the breakdown later when he's at that house because he really doesn't know what to do anymore, especially when he's there to save her.
Yes.
I think there is that would be about the point of no return.
Yeah,
you're right.
Do you agree with that, Luke? And also, what do you think of the stuff leading up to that scene where the mother dying thing and him trying to commit suicide?
I thought that, like, because of the childhood. I mean, obviously, he got abused too. The mother did too. So he felt like it's his thing. He's got to take care of the mom.
Yeah, totally.
Once the mom is gone, he kind of has no purpose in life. He's done.
By then, you do get that for real, yeah.
Yeah, and then, you know, when he had that vision of, you know, Nina in the water, he's like, you know what, I still have another thing I need to live for, so let's get these rocks out of the pockets. Which is a surprising way. I didn't, you know that's the way you could do it.
I thought he was down there just to, like, be as close to his mom for a long time. I didn't think he was going to go down there to kill himself.
It almost feels like... you know, from his mental breakdown that I imagine must have happened since his FBI days, right? Where he stopped having a career, quote unquote. From that point to taking care of his mother full time, I think he must have always decided this way. Like, if she were to die in her bed, like, natural causes,
I think
he would have committed suicide.
Like he had everything planned.
Yeah, he knew what he was doing. It looked way too thought out beforehand, you know what I'm saying? I think he was always willing to go down with the ship, so to speak. The ship being his mother. Which has a lot of old artistic connections there about, you know, not saying Oedipus or anything, I'm saying like art and stuff, Madonna and the baby, stuff like that. Cool. So, I think, saving the child, was it more like unfinished business for you guys? Did it feel that way?
It felt like unfinished business, mm-hmm. but it becomes the... reason why he stays alive, like the reason he chooses to keep leaving,
and also the reason for why he's what he says at the end at that dinner table, right, at the diner, which I think it's something we'll talk about. So at the end of the movie, as the last scene, this is after everything, which by the way they throw a twist in there and how in the mansion where he gets her how it happens, and I guess the girl got out of it herself. Maybe she would have probably been killed because there was like tons of other henchmen there that Joe killed for her conveniently. Anyway, so after all that happens, they go to a diner, right, eating breakfast or whatever, and she, you know, he's like, where do you want to go? And she's like, I don't know. I almost expected her to say, like, I'm a child, I don't know where to go, can you just keep me safe?
yeah, but he doesn't know either. But...
right. And he really genuinely doesn't know because he doesn't have a plan beyond his mom's life. And this is him confronting that. And when we see him mock shoot himself in the face.
And yeah, pretty brutal.
Yeah, pretty brutal, pretty cool. I mean, not cool, but you know what I'm saying, good effects. He does that, and it's obviously like, is that like, you could read them in many ways. You could read that as he's checked out. You could read that as that's what he wants to do in the moment because he doesn't know how to decide. But he can't do it because this girl is depending on him. Which is, I don't know if that's the right one, but something similar to that. Or a variation of some of those two or another third option, you know. So, like, how do you guys feel about how that scene ended?
Go ahead, Luke. I'll answer after.
I have no idea. I mean, he just went back to his crazy suicidal, tendency thoughts, and the girl was just there to snap him out of it. I think that's what the mom probably used to do. Because I think, wasn't there like an instance where he was trying to suffocate himself using a plastic bag, but then like
the
his
movie
mom was like in the shower or
that.
Something?
The movie opens.
Yeah, I mean, he did it a couple times.
Yes.
I mean, he's been doing it since he was a kid.
Yeah. So it's like they're there
for like he needs that for a rush or something.
They're there for themselves in a fucked up, like, traumatic way. Maybe like right. The way
I mean, I think
like, yeah. Go ahead.
This girl's probably gonna be like in the sequel. You know, you were still never really here, and like now she's gonna be the killer. Off
what's
all these
saying?
Pedophiles
yeah.
And shit.
Like they switch roles. Like he is her mother. He is his mother, and she is him. Not saying directly, obviously, yeah. But in the way of like. Who's going to end up taking care of each other at some point? Right now, he is of her, but you can almost see it as she will of him. I mean, that's it. That girl's life is not normal ever again, ever.
No.
Right?
She's got blood on her hands, and she's,
and the movie
she's
going
to be as fucked up as him.
The movie doesn't have any hope to give you either, which is strange because, you know, everyone that deserved to make it out makes it out, but it feels so hopeless.
Yeah, I think the movie does a good job.
No of, closure.
Well, I think the movie does a good job of kind of being real. You know, not everything has to end in dandelions and
which I would
dancing.
Appreciate. Yeah.
But what the movie does really interesting in the scene that we've kind of never even touched on, which when he does commit that suicide in his mind, and the whole world just keeps going, and it's like, oh, here's your check, and they have blood on them. And,
yeah.
You know, like, everyone still has conversation, everything's very normal, no one cares. And basically what the movie's saying is that no one cares because no one knows what happened to you guys. Like, if you guys made it out to the world, or if you guys made it out and everybody knew that you were part of a, you know, what's it called, a sex trafficking thing, and he helped you and whatever, maybe they'd all look at you differently.
Like the
but
definition
nobody
of
knows.
Unsung heroes kind
it's
a, of thing?
It's basically that.
I was going to mention that.
And it's, there's... The movie does a really good job with that. So I think what we get left with in this scenario is that I saw it as in he blows his head off because he, not because he wanted to go back or anything, like that's what he wants to do, is that he doesn't know what else to do. Yeah. So, but now that the girl's still obviously there, that's why he won't do it. And now they only have each other and they have to start from nothing because they don't know what to do because they both don't have families. At this point, they are the only family they have.
Yeah.
It's a shitty situation to be in, and no one cares because no one knows, even though they're in a crowd full of people.
Yeah, and you can almost see it like them on the run, and some reporter from TMZ tracks her down because she's the daughter of this guy who jumped off that was running for senator or something.
Yeah, but they didn't even make that announcement when in the news article, when in the news story. When the guy committed suicide, they didn't say that he left behind a daughter.
No, they didn't.
It was really weird.
Very weird.
It's almost like she's non-existent.
It's almost like she was never really here.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
What? I just threw in a haunted ghost scenario or like a person that doesn't exist.
Wrong movie.
Wrong movie, yes. You're right. You're right, they didn't. I'm not saying maybe out of convenience or whatever. It could be Thor. But yeah, I was just throwing that in as a jab. But you're right. And I'm not saying that's the next day. I'm saying that could be the next day for these people. Or they just live off hotels and maybe they live in a national park for their lives. Who knows? Right? As long as they're happy, I guess, at some point. But they never will be. That's the whole point, that they never will be happy. They will always stare blankly into each other, but not really looking at each other for a long time. And I'm not even saying straight up. Obviously, these people... They will support each other, and it will work out, probably. But they need massive amounts of psychology.
But what I think we have is we have two people who are survivors. And not only survivors, they're fighters. You know, they're like...
Yeah, it's almost like she doesn't count as a survivor until she used that razor on that guy.
Exactly.
Right.
She's a victim the whole time until then.
Right.
And this guy, obviously, is a survivor from all his past experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been fighting for the little guy or for himself or whatever. Until this point, and he needs somebody else, a survivor, another person that's as damaged as him to help him get out of it.
Right. Well, that's the most hopeful one.
That's what I'm taking out of it.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely, I mean, obviously, as humans, we are designed to feel that way or to take the most hopeful right thing out of something like that.
Except for Luke.
Except for Luke.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Yeah, we look out for you. And I feel like that's generally around the same way I'm feeling. But what about you, Luke? You heartless punk.
Shut up. Nah, man, it's gonna be it's the sequel, man. Cold-blooded killers, the two of them.
Mickey and Mallory Knox. My ass killed Knox.
She's gonna get into the little kitty porn dungeons. Tell the location. He's gonna come.
Oh my god, that's so dark. So dark. That's so bad. Yeah, she's gonna get in, and on the first day of shooting, right, she'll like text him or something, and he'll come and bust it with a hammer.
Right.
It's like you know what this reminds me of? It's like what they did to Sicario 2. I mean, I haven't seen the movie yet.
Still haven't seen it.
But like the first one, it's like this artistic. It has all these awesome people behind the camera and in front that are not in the sequel. And the sequel clearly looks like a cash grab to be more action-driven to the violence. And the first one's more political statement. It was more artsy, right? It feels like a sequel would be the Soldado version of You Were Never Really Here.
Right.
With them two kicking ass and taking names of kiddie porn dungeon people. Ah, oh, so dark. You know what I got? You know what I got? Another atmospheric whiff out of this movie reminded me of A Walk Among the Tombs, that Liam Neeson movie where he's like in the '80s. He's a detective in the '80s or nineties, and he's
You know what I'm talking about, Luke?
Yeah, did you get that feeling too with the killers and shit? Those weird, horrible, sadistic fuckers. I got that.
Man, I don't even remember.
I mean, I don't remember all the details either, but I remember getting the same feeling. So, anything else in this movie? We didn't mention a lot of Joaquin's performance and that mental breakdown scene after.
I think Joaquin does a great job. It's hard to analyze this movie.
They just
let him loose. So.
Probably.
But he's really good at showing emotions.
Yeah.
He's really good at looking troubled.
Every time I see a movie with him on, I want to see The Master again.
Yeah.
So good in that movie. Yeah, but he's been really good for a long time since he was young. But that mental breakdown scene when he discovers that the guy was, you know, sliced open. And I think, that's another important thing I almost forgot to mention. That's when we start seeing his, let's just call it PTSD for as a shorthand. Not sure that's exactly what it is. But his flashbacks and stuff, that's the first time we see it in his live viewing of the world. It's when he's going downstairs after the breakdown. If he takes off his shirt, right? He's walking downstairs. There's very slow stuff going on. You hear some noises that you don't know is coming from inside the house or inside his brain. We find out that's inside his brain, but like you're not sure. And then he's in the room where he finds Nina. He sees his mother and his father from his flashback. Obviously, the mother's dead.
Yeah, that's a complete mental breakdown.
Like we see a transition of the type of flashing that he's normally getting. It's like a different, more visceral version of it. It's like it's been degrading and getting worse from the beginning of the movie. I don't know. But I feel like the movie is saying something by the way it's depicting it at that point. And as what I thought, I just want to mention it at least because even I may not know exactly what it means, but at least mentioning it should be important. Unless you guys have a theory or an opinion on it?
No, it sounds like a mental breakdown.
Right. Lukey Poo?
No. Maybe it's just, mental breakdown.
Yeah. When in doubt, go with the flow.
Yep.
All right, guys. Anything else on the You Were Never Really Here?
Is it me or do they let Joaquin Phoenix just run the movie by himself all the time? Isn't that
it
feel
feels
like
that
they...
way? Did you guys hear about him jokering it up soon?
Really?
Yeah.
I'm afraid of that. Then we might lose another person.
We might lose another person? We mean that the way we lost Heath Ledger? Damn, it's dark.
These are dark movies I've been watching.
You think he'll do another Heath Ledger level performance on that and then die off? Shuffle off this mortal coil, and then it would be like, but what about that other guy? What's his name? Jared Leto. And like, well, he's not worth it. Not worth it. Maybe. What do you think about that, Luke? Would you like a Phoenix
I would hope,
Joker?
I hope that's not the case.
You don't want him to be Joker?
No.
Oh, why not? You just don't see it?
Well, not if he's going to off himself.
Oh, see, no, that's no. That's not a real option on the table here. Stupid.
Okay, then yeah, he could probably be a really good Joker.
Jesus,
guys. As long as he doesn't off himself.
You guys are a bunch of like jinx, you know, like very superstitious, turn around, throw salt around, you know, jinx back.
No, you just owe me a Coke if I say jinx.
I'm just saying, you get superstitious.
I hear you.
The same socks for the football game, so I'll say lose.
And underwear.
All right, guys, I think that's it for this review. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll review our last film of the evening, which is an older film, I think from 1959, House on Haunted Hill. And so stay with us and find out what that's about.
I'm Vincent Price, and you're invited to my party in the House on Haunted Hill, where so far the ghosts have murdered only 7 people. So won't you come and make it 8? You'll see human heads without bodies. Mysterious pools of blood dripping from the ceiling. The walls move slowly in against you. Don't try to escape, you can't.
No.
Are you ready, dear?
Yes, damn you.
House on Haunted Hill. A millionaire offers $10,000 to 5 people who agree to be locked in a large, spooky rented house overnight with him and his wife.
Dun, dun, dun.
Da-da.
From 1959, right?
This is I think the cutoff was like 1960.
Yes.
Remastered so and in color.
Barely
yes,
made
that's
it.
That's what it says in the intro. Way to barely meet the cutoff line there, Luke. By the way. And also starring the fucking late, great Vincent Price.
The one and only.
Yes, for those who may not know that name or like, hey, I've heard of that.
You should know his voice.
You definitely recognize from his voice alone. He did the middle part of Thriller, the song, where he talks about, you know, spiders and coffins. That's him. He's a solid actor, guys.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that right now. You know what? I just said that. I might as well start off. So I was a little surprised by this movie. I realized that I have not seen it before.
Whoa.
I thought I had. I did not see it before because I didn't recognize anything in the movie. And like, oh, what? It must have been some other Vincent Price horror movie because he's done a lot of those that he did that I saw because I was like, I thought I saw this one, but nope, my first time. And I didn't expect quite to be the way it was. And I'm surprised for as much as the movie got out of me in its, what, hour 17-minute running time. It got more out of the plot than the general, like, you know, plot of it. It got more out of it than I thought it could. Like, it squeezed more stuff out of it than I thought. And other stuff in other areas, there's some problems, obviously. But I think that comes more with the times than it is with, you know, being like a bad script or something. Not to say that the movie is flawless or anything. I'm sure we'll get to those kind of things. But I overall enjoyed the movie. Vincent Price is magnetic, dude. I want to see him recite the alphabet. I don't care. The phone book, whatever you want, dude. I don't know, he has a very magnetic eyes and expressions. He's tall as fuck. I don't know, he's really cool. I like him. Can't say much about the other actresses, unfortunately. The other actors in general. I like
the girl who plays his
wife. I liked her. She did pretty well up against him. But other than that, I don't think anybody else did anything special or anything. So those are my 2 cents. Quick 2 cents. Luke, what do you think of this movie?
This was my second time watching this movie, but this time I saw it in color. The first time was black and white.
Was the original theatrical black and white?
I believe so. Then it got remastered into color.
Right. That's cool. Because there were color movies back then.
I think, it had to be like on the cusp, right?
No, movies in color were in the 30s, late 30s, early 40s.
I wouldn't know. I mean, you grew up during that time, so you'd know, but I don't.
Yeah, that's great. There's a joke here. Now, that's what I'm saying. It's weird if it wasn't black and white first, because, like I said, they were in color for a while. Anyway, so, second time around, what did you think of it?
Still kind of felt hokey to me, yeah. I mean, obviously, for its time, I guess...
It looked like a sad cardboard cutout horror movie. Ghost. Yeah.
You know. It is what it was. But yeah. I mean, for the time, I'm assuming this was a horror movie.
Grain of salt, and, guys. You know, I mean, it's pretty obvious, right? A little bit. Grain of salt.
I mean, I think this is like a PG movie nowadays.
Oh, like a G.
Yeah.
No, PG.
No. They show a gun. It's PG.
Oh, yeah. They show multiple guns and coffins, too, which is extra emo today.
It's definitely PG then. Borderline PG-13.
Also, the movie takes a while to kick in, considering it's so short, you know?
Like, it doesn't.
It takes a while for it to get to midnight. I'm like, we're still heading to midnight here? You know? Not to say that's a bad thing. Literally, I'm surprised.
The last 10 minutes, or the last one, maybe even 5 minutes, everything happens.
Well, a lot happens, yes. Not everything, but yes, a lot. Also, it's like one of those M. Night Shyamalan kind of feels like twisty things. Like, they're going for this. Like, I was surprised by that. I did not expect it. So, Ralph, before we carry on this movie, what did you think of it? First time? Second time?
Second time, just like Luke, seeing it in black and white first.
Did you see it with him the first time?
I don't think so.
It was really rare for both of you to see a movie like that, not together. Anyway, continue.
I could have sworn we saw it somehow.
And then in color. Anyways.
Okay.
Yeah, besides the movie being hokey because it's from the 59, I like the whole Twilight Zone kind of intro going on with this, like, we're going to narrate this thing for you. Mm-hmm. And you can't tell if he's doing it after, before, during. Like, what is he doing? Like, is this all pre-recorded? Like, it's an interesting feel.
Maybe it's in his contract to constantly voice over things.
I don't know, but it's interesting.
Yeah.
And it's really weird also in the beginning with that other guy who's just there because his brother died, but he wants money. I don't know. It's weird. They did this whole introduction about him. He's him really being scared of the thing, but he knows a lot about the house. I guess that's why he's there.
Yeah.
That guy's just, like, really weird, and he's kind of over the top the whole movie.
Yeah, I have. Okay, yeah.
We'll get into that in a bit. Yes. But overall, Vincent Price, like you said earlier, Oscar, very magnetic. The moment you see him in the screen with everybody else, your eyes are attracted to him. When he speaks, attention is drawn. It just got one of those, you know, one of the voices, one of those faces.
For sure.
So it works out really well for this genre and for the movie. So
awesome.
Yeah, I overall liked it. I can't think of anything else to really go into.
I do want to talk about the opening a bit, because I think the opening is super good. It's super good. As one of the best things about the movie, as it streamlines, tells you everything you need to know, as a very, like, simple and very effective way to introduce these characters, introduce the tone, introduce the suspicions you're gonna have about Vincent Price's character, whose name is Lauren or something, Mr. Lauren.
Mr. Lauren.
I think it does Frederick. A lot of that in the opening, and then the movie begins, and you realize there's a whole opening to just opening because they all have to meet themselves and shit. Which I didn't like as much, but the very beginning of it is really cool. I really like that opening. It's very good. Yeah, you don't have to overwrite, guys. It's just really easy. Let's do what they did. All right. So, should we just enter spoilers because it's so short and the movie's so old, or do you guys want to say something?
I mean,
as far as what kind of recommendation status you want to give it before we get there?
The movie is so old; it's public domain.
Is it really?
It is.
Are you saying we could have seen this on YouTube? You didn't have to buy it?
Possibly. I don't know.
Yeah, I think you could. Public domain movies are on there all the time. Wow, that's really funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think it's, for posterity's sake, it's really good. I think it's, how do you guys think it shaped up, like, movies today? In what way? Like, what do you see in this movie that you can see in others down the line?
Well, I think what the movie does well is it does a lot with a little. You're in a house. It's a set. It's basically a small set.
Mm-hmm.
You reuse most of your set. You go back into rooms. You just change the lightings in it. You do all those things.
Right.
I mean, it works out. That end, you have this whole plot twist thing. So that works out also for the movie. Because the movie does a good thing in the beginning where it builds you up on... Gives you what did we say? You just said it. You just said the word that is eluding me.
I don't know. I'm sorry.
Well, it gives you it starts giving you what you're gonna think about them because everyone during their introductions.
Suspicions.
Yeah, I guess suspicions.
Foreshadowing things.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
All of that, and then as you go further down the line, you still have to build up. Passed on them. Well, I have this from this person before. This person's like this. Well, I don't know why he would do this. This guy's a villain. This guy's not. You know, you don't know where to. You don't know where it falls throughout the movie. So overall, I think it was pretty good.
Yeah, Luke.
I like that. You know, obviously this was a very low budget movie.
I mean, at the time.
What was it like? Even at the time, I think. 200,000?
Okay.
Damn it. So,
well, I mean, horror movies back then weren't high budget, right? I don't think so.
You know, but it did so good for its thing. Apparently, after Hitchcock saw it, he made Psycho because he's like, holy shit, you know, low budget film, but it was good. Brought in something, you know, something new for him.
The way you said it.
Yeah, the way you said it was really funny.
Yeah. Estimated budget was $200,000.
Yeah, but that came out in what, 1960? After this movie?
1959.
Psycho?
Oh, 61, I believe?
61, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I hear you. So I think that some of the tropes were like, it's funny because it's kind of a passing of the torch when it comes to some of these horror movies, or specifically like haunted house movies. First of all, I think this one may have sparked a trend in haunted houses and stuff, and probably in a bad way. There's probably been a lot of bad movies out there with it, but also like you know once it died off and then someone brought it back again. It probably became like a good genre movie. Now we have The Conjuring and shit like that, right? Which is pretty good. But we also have really bad ones, like the remake, House on Haunted Hill. Which I remember disliking it so hard, but I don't remember. I haven't seen it since it came out. The one with Liam Neeson?
Didn't see it.
Dude, it's been a while. And I'm partial to Rope.
You've seen The Ralph, right?
Stephen King.
I've never seen that one.
I'm pretty sure you have. It was a big movie.
Ralph, I
remember.
You saw House on Haunted Hill in my house.
Dude. I don't remember
which is on
anything
a hill.
About it.
No, I remember. I rented it back when I had like...
You sure I didn't fall asleep?
Hollywood Video?
No, it was like a dish thing. I had to like hook up the fucking phone line to like the dish thing so it could like unlock the channel and stuff.
I don't remember this at
Old
all.
Old school. I remember you were there.
Yeah, well, I wasn't paying attention.
Okay, doesn't matter, guys. The point is that movie, from my memory, of course, because it's been that long... I remember not liking it. So, yeah. So I think it did do some of that for the subgenre trend stuff. For horror itself, I think it did some good stuff with suspense, like being alone in a room, the idea of separating from a group. But you just have to forgive them in this movie though, because they don't know. They don't know. They think it's just a house. They really do think they actually do a good job of making us believe that it's just a house. No one believes hauntings are a thing in this movie, except for one dude. And he's just creeping everyone out.
Like,
that's his job. He does a terrible job of, you know, making anyone feel like warned. terrible job at it. So with that in mind, I do recommend that it's for Vincent Price alone. Just watch all his movies. He's done some really good ones out there too, like, that no one really knows about or no one's talked about in a while, but they're really good. So watch that. I recommend it. Luke, do you recommend it overall or like for like a or for history class only?
Nope. Oh. I would say go see it, but you know, just because it's a great comparison of what, you know, what we deemed horror today versus back in that time. And, like, even, like, some of the shots, you know, where I'm sure they were considered scary, where, what's her face? You know, she was in, like, a dark room, and, you know, no jump cuts, nothing. She's just walking backwards, and bam, there's a skeleton, and it just freaks her the hell out.
Yeah, and then the one with the blind woman, which is like, come on, you have to look like that, but whatever, blind woman. Like, Jesus, someone should tell you to brush your hair or something. The blind woman's like, I mean, she's freaky looking. I mean, the movie doesn't, it's not like it was a comedy fest for me. It was as serious as the movie was. I never found it scary, but I can see how it could be scary. You know what I'm saying? So, like, it wasn't ineffectual, you know what I'm saying? But some of the other stuff was pretty bad. Like, that skeleton was pretty bad. For me, but
although I do want to know, how the rope scene, how it was, you know, supposed to, like, time, how the hell did they pull that off?
Right. Yeah, very, very specific rope hanging going on there. And also, you know, when they throw in the bird into the acid, which, by the way, why would you keep the acid?
That is the worst place for it.
It's literally the worst. The one place where if you're drunk, you're going to fall in.
Right.
Anyway,
at least put a railing that bird in there.
If they put, remember when they drop a bird in to show that the acid works,
uh-huh.
And then the bones come back so pristine, and like I think that bird had more bones than it should have. It was like so it's bad. I mean, obviously outdated, but you know.
It's like this acid fucking eat through anything except bone,
except for the calcium-ridden bones we have.
Right, can't do calcium. Yes.
It's just funny. It's really funny.
You know what else is funny? On the IMDb page, the skeleton actually gets credited as himself.
Yeah, I saw that. It says it on the credits, actually. I stayed and watched all the credits, because back then the credits were very fucking short. So yeah, I watched and I saw
like
that.
Seven people work on this movie.
What's funny also is that they make a reference. Oh, he's a millionaire. Yeah, $10,000 is nothing for him.
It's like a nickel for us.
Like a nickel that's for what us, he said, right? And then, but they also make a reference before. They were like, "Oh, well, he's spending $50,000." One, this is a different guy who says it.
Yeah,
and he's like, "He's spending $50,000, even for a millionaire, is a lot of money." And I was like, one person just said the other thing.
Yeah. Wait, and now you're going to let us, the audience, figure out for ourselves what's a lot of money and what's not. Yeah, I'm with you. If he's a millionaire, $50,000 ain't nothing.
Right. Well, for some reason, any movie that has to deal with money like that, with like the difference of millionaires or whatever, I always think back to Austin Powers when he demands $1 million and they all laugh at him.
And then he demands $100 billion.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. I actually have an inflation calculator up. So it says $10,000 today would be worth $85,000.
Okay. A good chunk of change, but I mean, worth it to die and give it to your family after you die, you know, kind of thing?
Yeah. Possibly. I don't know.
Yeah, obviously, he doesn't pay his workers enough.
Right.
Yeah. Well, since was it his secretary?
I don't know what she was. Wasn't one just of the said she worked somewhere.
No, she never met him, she said, in the movie. She just like works in one of his many companies. They keep saying many companies.
Oh, yeah, because he's so rich.
So can we get into spoilers? Because I have a big problem with the plot at the end.
You mean that the plot is wrapped up in like a sentence?
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I'm just going to go into spoilers for Haunts on Haunted Hill starting right now.
3, 6, 9, 12. 12 feet. Three, six. Now I'm going to knock on the other wall. When you hear me, you knock on this wall.
Lower down.
Okay. You could just have like a hooker or like a girlfriend. You don't have to marry everyone that you meet. Vincent Price. What is his problem? He's talking about fourth wife. Maybe he likes to marry people to kill them.
Yeah.
The movie should have explored that psyche, not the fact that he has to get married in order to keep the money, and stopping her from killing him is to double trick her into this crazy ass scenario of a haunted house with five other people, assuming as alibis, and I'm one of them too. She drove a woman to hysteria for this. Like what? Oh, the other way around. The wife did it. So ridiculous.
Oscar,
so bad.
He's the modern age Drew Peterson. His wife just disappeared. He's the guy who all his wives like disappeared, and they always suspect him of murder.
Yes, is that the name? I forgot the name. Dude, yeah. Like it's so bad. Like, dude, just I don't know. Use your right hand for a while. Like, you know?
Switch it up with the left. Switch it on. Let it go numb.
Why go through all this trouble? What are people like? And you know what it reminds me of? Think of another movie, Ralph. Reminds you of that one, Austin Powers. This one reminds me of John Hurt in oh my God, what's the name of that? History of Violence. Remember at the end, he's like super rich, he has that mansion, and right, that he has the really mansion thing, and he talks about like yeah, I never had a wife, I didn't see any points, I just wanted to like he says basically what fucking Vincent Price should be doing as far as mansion living is doing what he would do. Obviously, he was a big bad guy in the movie, but if anyone's seen History of Violence, you know what I'm talking about. How it's like, what's the point if you're going to cheat and hide and scheme? Like, what's the point of all that? Just don't get married.
Yeah.
I
think the movie alludes to that Vincent Price is the villain the whole time, right? It alludes to that, but what it really alluded to with the ending of the movie is that he knew their plan the whole time. He knew that she wanted this. Okay, why did she want this? So now that he knew, now when he found out, he was like, "Oh, okay, I'm just gonna use it to my advantage."
Right.
So there you go.
Yeah, and one thing I didn't also like about the movie, and it relates to this plot, is that they did everything in their power to either throw a wrench into the argument or completely say, with a period at the end, that the house is not haunted. Because everything that was happening that was freaky or was terrifying for these characters, of course, or that was dangerous, was all human-made and for very specific reasons. And some of them were ridiculous. For example, like the old lady just, or the way the caretaker dude grabbed her and said, "You can't leave the house. You gotta leave the house now and shit." I'm like, dude, why do it so creepy? Just fucking go up and talk to her. Hey, did you try the champagne yet? You should get the fuck out of this house. Anyway, like all that was explained. My point of the movie is that nothing in there that happens wasn't man-made, right?
Right.
So why go through all the hoops? Why go all the hoops? Why can't you just be a haunted movie? Or be a haunted house movie as well as people scheming around each other? Like, does that make it more interesting, or is that just something I have to wait for in scripts later on in years or something? I just find it, like, it kind of sucks. Like, it's like the title is a red herring of the movie. It's like, ooh, I can't wait to go see House on Haunted Hill. It ain't haunted, though. You know? That's not fair. That's not fun. Do you want to see that, Luke? Anyway. I thought they did a lot of work, a lot of like story bending to explain away all of the potential horror stuff in it to be supernatural, and I found that a little unnerving and I didn't like it very much. Anything else? Have any other thoughts or opinions on the movie or the acting or anything at all?
It was all right.
Nothing fabulous.
No, I guess not. Yeah. Still though, it's still cool to watch though. Like a time capsule. Vincent Price is pretty cool, pretty badass all the time. It makes me want to see his other movies. So that's The House on Haunted Hill, or just House on Haunted Hill, right? I think. I'm not 100%.
Oh, yeah. Shit, I just remembered.
What?
I totally did watch that other remake with you, Luke.
Wow.
Told you.
Wow.
I am just remembering it right now, and I called it a piece of shit. All right, cool.
Do you really remember, or are you saying that?
No.
You really remember?
I remember it now.
Okay, cool. Maybe one day we'll watch it, just to make sure to see if it's right that it's bad.
Yeah, I remember.
I am not buying it.
Yeah,
no. I'm not buying it.
Well, it won't be rights free or whatever. Anyway, that's it for our show. Remember, let us know what you think about this movie and all the other movies that we talk about here. You can send feedback at podmoviecast@gmail.com. And if you want to look for us and find us on Twitter, for example, you can find me at Armin Filmmaker, which is Filmmaker with A-R-M-E-N. Ralph?
You can follow me at Gamer Ralph. That is with two R's and an F.
And Lukey?
Slothmaster Luke.
Sloth
with an
master.
At the front.
With a what at the front?
At.
Oh, with a doi. At, yeah. If you're new to Twitter, you know, go to Twitter, you know, feedback, help me page. Remember, support us. If you can't support us with money and the donations thing for bonus episodes, you can at the very least show us your love and with a ratings review on iTunes or whatever podcast catcher app that you use. That'll be amazing, even if it's on your computer, wherever you need to do. It takes you a minute. That would be lovely. Remember, we are a bi-weekly show. We come out every other weekend. Next weekend is going to be my films here, and I got three already set up for you guys. It's going to be Mission Impossible Fallout, which is, I think, the fifth of the sixth Mission Impossible movie. And then we're going to review a Netflix original documentary made by Kirby Dick. It's The Bleeding Edge. Yeah, I know. Uh-huh. The Bleeding Edge. Check it out. It should be out by then. If something happens and it's not out, I'll choose something else, of course. And then we're going to end our marathon and that review of that show with my last pick here. It's going to be The Shop Around the Corner, which is an Ernst Lubitsch film, I think came out in 1940. So check that out, guys. It's a very good film. It's the remake that came from that, if you want to know. It's You've Got Mail, but this is way better than You've Got Mail. But that You've Got Mail is a straight-up remake of The Shop Around the Corner. So check that out. It is a romantic comedy.
What would it be called back in then?
You got
a telegram?
You got a telegram? Yeah. You've got Western Union updates.
You got smoke signals.
Yeah, exactly.
Smoke signals?
More signals.
Man, can you imagine? Right. There's no privacy in smoke signals. Everyone in town is going to see what they're saying about you.
That's true, if they can translate.
You guys were disgusting talking to each other.
Yeah, the other day. It took you 7 hours just to write... intercourse, because they didn't say sex back then. Okay, anyway, that's it, guys. Until next time, I am Oscar.
Coitus.
You are?
Ralph.
And he is?
Luke?
Yes, thank you. See you later.
I'm so puzzled.
In case I don't see ya. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.